Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 183 of Geek Town Radio, and I have this week with me...
It's
Matt, how are you doing?
I'm good, Dave. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, thanks. Cool. What have you been up to recently?
Well, I'm going to start with a negative but end with three positives, so... Yeah, it's fair, I suppose. I'm going to start off with Supergirl. I'm really struggling to enjoy this season in any way, shape, or form.
Really?
Because if you remember, me and Robert actually stopped podcasting after season three. That the third season was our last. We were just like we just don't want to do this kind of thing anymore.
Yeah.
We did give it a like send off podcast. We didn't say like, hey, we're just going to not do anything for it, because I thought season three was particularly bad for certain reasons. Again, in that I explain why, and I thought, hey, I'll come back for season four. I haven't got the podcast, so I haven't got to like concentrate on it so much, kind of thing. And I can just watch it a bit more, sort of maybe freely or without thinking about it as much, kind of thing. Yeah. I think it's got the same kind of problems for in season four, but with different characters, because you don't have the villains from season three. The main two problems I'm having with the show, one of which started last season and Robert pointed out quite a bit, is it's too political. Which, for Robert's side, obviously he lives in America and Trump and all that stuff, and he's more involved, you could say, with that.
Yes.
As opposed to me, who I can somewhat ignore the Trump stuff and just go on about things. So he obviously had that problem slightly more than what I did, for obvious reasons. But my problem, since pretty much after the pilot, I don't remember as much of season one, but in seasons sort of two, three, and four, I've always felt the Supergirl was too weak. And it continued to be a problem in season four. There was a particular scene in an episode, I think it was the premiere or the second episode, where she's trying to get into this door or something, Supergirl. These two people come in the window, punch Supergirl in the face or something. They put the metahuman handcuffs on her, and then they just kick her out the window. Those types of scenes that just annoy me quite a bit, because I feel like with Arrow and with Flash and Black Lightning and like the Legends, that they're able to at least fight better. I've never really felt like those characters have been weak. I mean, I know like with Rachel Ghoul and Arrow and stuff, you had the fight there, but that was like, you know, explained better and he overcame the villain and stuff. I keep trying to watch it and keep trying to enjoy it because I want to try and enjoy it, but I'm just not, and I'm not sure what to do about that.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a fundamental problem with either a Supergirl or a Superman series. It's always been a fundamental problem that he's so ridiculously overpowered. And both of those characters have always been ridiculously overpowered. So you have to find some way of knocking them down a peg or two. And that's where the problem comes in. And to do that on a TV budget can be quite difficult. Yeah. I mean, I don't have as many issues with the show this season. I think I can understand, certainly from Robert's point of view, why, you know, the political stuff is very grating on him. I entirely get that. I mean, I quite like it. I like what they're doing with it. I like that sort of analogy that they're using. That works for me. Overall, though, I am kind of enjoying this season. I don't like it as much as some of the others. I mean, Legends is getting very silly this season, but I rather like that. Yeah. I like the fact that they're just prepared to do whatever. in that show.
And but it's, like, we know that, they know that, and they can kind of, we can kind of go with it kind of thing.
Yes, like, it very much like walks its own line, that series, compared to the others. Mm-hmm. And you don't have as much of that sort of problem with, even with, you know, I mean, Arrow's a man, and with Flash, yes, he is a meta, but his only power is speed, you know, whereas with Superman and Supergirl, the powers, you know, are speed, strength, invulnerability, you know, it's always a problem, because I'm relating this more to the comic books. So, you know, with Superman, they've always said, yeah, this is a person who, if he had the different personality type, could essentially be a god that's a dictator to the world because he's that overpowered. He could be ruling everybody, but he chooses not to do that. And that's always a problem when it comes to a TV show, is he could essentially turn up and just smash somebody in the face and, you know, he or she could turn up and smash somebody in the face and that'd be it. So, yeah, I mean, it's tricky. And you've either got to kind of take the point of view of you're just going to roll with it, let it go, or you take issue with it and just stop watching.
See, I'm still watching it because I want it to get better, instead of, because I know people that, like, you know, try and hate watch stuff, and I don't really kind of understand that, but I'm watching it in the hopes of, like, hopefully this episode will be better, and then, like, there's a few good things. I'll see how it goes for the rest of the season. Just thought I'd bring it up. Spyro, the reignited trilogy, the remastered trilogy, came out a week ago from when this is coming out. This podcast came out on the 13th of November last week. It's pretty good. I like it a lot. I haven't got as much as the, like, sort of nostalgia for that as I do with Crash. If you're familiar with, like, I guess me as a podcaster, really love Crash Bandicoot a lot, and I think it's Crash Bandicoot 3, I think, is the best platformer I've ever played. But I do like Spyro more than Mario and more than Jack and Dexter. But what about you? What's your kind of
I remember Spyro. I've not. Mm-hmm. I mean, I liked Crash at the time. I don't know. They're not my sort of games, those type of platformy things. Right. I mean, I have Odyssey, and I've not really played it very much. I like games that have, you know, are more story driven. I'm far more into those sort of things, or things that are strategy games or building games. You know, those are the things that I gravitate towards. So those sort of platformy things, the kind of cutesy little, what I would call a Nintendo game, you know, that sort of feel, I'm not as into that sort of stuff. So I've not really played either of these. I remember playing the original Spyro when it was out, but they're not ones that I'm likely to get. Yeah, yeah, you know, people enjoy them, go for it. That's what I say.
Hill House, or Haunting of Hill House, I finished. Really, really good series. Around like episode 5 and 6 is when I felt it really started to sort of click, particularly because of certain story beats, which obviously I won't spoil. Yeah. But the first sort of 3 or 4 episodes, it sort of tries to tell you, like, okay, this is what type of horror story this is. And it very much has, like, you know, it jumps back and forth between the two timelines with the older versions of the kids and with the younger versions of them, like at the house with the younger dad and the mama and everything. And throughout, like, the first 9 episodes, there's this feeling that, like, something happened, and they kind of keep alluding to it, and the characters keep saying, oh, but we never solved this, or when this happened, and you're thinking, like, okay what is that? But it doesn't kind of, like, annoy you. It gets sort of mentioned throughout the season as this interesting kind of mystery, but as things slowly get revealed, like the red door stuff and some of the other ghosts in the background, as they kind of get revealed a bit more, it does kind of slowly give you those answers. But the main kind of cool thing with it is I think when you're seeing, like, ghosts in the background of certain rooms, like, if it kind of gives you that sense of, like, okay, what is that? Why is it there? What's it going to do?
Yeah.
I think it does all that really, really well. I would actually suggest that you watch it at night instead of, like, sort of one, you know, if you're going to watch it like a Saturday afternoon or something, it just won't quite be as effective.
Yes.
That is really meant to be this kind of, like, tense horror thing, as opposed to something you just, like, you know, like an episode of The Flash or something you can just kind of watch or something.
Yeah.
It's really good at what it tries to do as well. So has it been renewed for season 2?
I don't think it has yet, as far as we're aware.
It's been talked about a lot. It's been very successful from what I've heard. So
yeah, it seems to have been pretty successful. I don't know whether it's one of those things that would end up being a kind of anthology series in some way, but
I think that might work.
I watched the first few episodes of it. I haven't actually got back to watching the rest of it yet. Horror's not really a sort of area that I generally kind of gravitate towards, but I did really enjoy the two episodes I've watched. I've just, other things have got in the way and I just haven't managed to. As always happens, I end up watching one or two episodes of something and then get distracted by other stuff. But it is one that I would like to go back to. I might do that sort of over the Christmas break and try and watch the rest of it.
Yeah, like I tend to try and watch things like, you know, Scream and Halloween and those sorts of slashers and like survival films and like the series that's actually called Slasher as well, that's similar in that way.
Yeah.
Just to see who survives and that sort of thing, a bit like the sort of Saw thing. Obviously Saw is more like game based and stuff. But I'm trying to get into like different types of horror. American Horror Story this season, I'm not really feeling quite so much. It's going a bit sort of witchy-esque, but not in a like Sabrina way. I feel like Sabrina's doing that better than American Horror Story. But some things work and some things don't. The Good Place just finished, unfortunately, for the mid-season finale, a little bit unexpectedly. Usually we kind of know, and this is my first time watching the series weekly, so I didn't know how many episodes would be in like the first half of the season, plus it's 13, so there isn't like half and half. I've been reviewing it this season. It's been really, really good. Really, really good first half to season three. What do you kind of think of it?
It's been phenomenal, that series. Yeah. It's been one of my favourite comedies of the year. The way it changes and morphs every season into something a little bit different. Nothing kind of, ironically, for a show that was all about resetting things in the early days, the fact is that the actual show itself doesn't go back to the start, and like a lot of traditional sitcoms, it's not like that. It alters on every single season to quite drastically. So I'm thoroughly enjoying this season. I think it is one of the best comedies on TV, and well worth watching if you haven't caught it yet.
Yeah, and then I just want to quickly mention The Walking Dead. It's gone a bit better this
yes.
season.
Yeah.
Since Gimple has been not fired but like moved to another room kind of thing, and Angela Kang has finally taken over, so it's been very, very good this season. We've only got two episodes left, but since like episode six, it's basically been like her Walking Dead, because she was kind of wrapping up Gimple's mess that he left. Just wanted to say it's nice to kind of enjoy watching it a bit more again rather than waiting for it to be good. It also makes it better for podcast wise, because you can enjoy it a bit better. So
if you want to know more about Walking Dead, obviously me and Matt do a weekly podcast on The Walking Dead, which is out on entertainmenttalk.org every Wednesday. But I would completely agree with that point. And if you are somebody that got really annoyed by last season and abandoned it, go back and watch this season. It's vastly, vastly improved. It is a much, much better show now than it was for most of last season. So I would urge you to go back and try it again, because this season's been excellent, I think, so far.
I think even if you did randomly drop out at some point in like 7 or 8, I think because like with the time jump and stuff at the start of 9, that's actually a fairly decent place to just like jump back in.
Yeah.
So it's good for that as well. Stuff that I've been up to, other than Red Dead, but you've got it on your list. So
yes. So for me, Blind Spot came back for its fourth season, and it's as silly a show as it ever was. we've talked before about how many things can they end up tattooing before this gets completely ridiculous. But the nice thing about the show this season is you've got this interesting change in one of the lead characters. Jane has reverted back to her Remy persona, which is the sort of was always the original plan right at the very start. Was, although we didn't know who she was, it was revealed that she was trying to infiltrate the FBI but had just lost her memory, and that persona's now reappeared. So you've got that as an interesting sort of inside mole as one of the lead characters that you knew really well, and she's doing a great job actually playing that, or sort of battling the situation that she's in, because the organization has been sort of fallen apart and all that sort of stuff. So really enjoying that. Narcos Mexico started this season as well, which is Narcos, but not Narcos. It's actually Narcos Mexico season one, although it is the fourth season of Narcos. It resets everything because it moves everything from Colombia to Mexico. Diego Luna is one of the leads in it. It's just brilliant. really, really good. If you like the first few seasons of Narcos, you'll like this one. It's very much the same sort of format. I don't know how accurate a lot of this stuff is, but you end up with certain characters which are introduced as minor characters, but you know are going to end up becoming major players later on because they're names that you might recognize from the drug cartels. So, it's been fascinating. And I think I'm about 4 episodes into that. So I'm thoroughly enjoying that. Go and watch it. It's well worth it. I also watched the first episode of The Romanoffs, which it's kind of an anthology series where every episode is slightly, it takes an entirely different cast. So each episode is utterly different. The thread that stitches them all together is all the characters are descendants of the Romanoffs, who were the Russian royal family that were all horrifically murdered. So they're all sort of scattered around the world, all these descendants, and they're very, very distant. I mean, that was sort of years and years ago. So they're all very distant descendants of that family. And some sort of know that they are, some don't. And it's just looking at various things to do with their lives. I've only watched the opening episode so far. I say episode, they're an hour and a half long each. They're essentially mini movies, or almost full length features, actually. And it was one of those. I actually listened to it because I'm interviewing the composers for it later on. And it was another one of those where I thought, oh, well, I need to watch an episode of this, but I don't know whether I actually want to watch it. Really enjoyed the first episode. I was sort of half playing around on my phone when it first started and ended up getting sucked into it. So it is well worth watching. My only critique would be the fact that hour and a half is a long time to have to dedicate to something for every single episode, because it is essentially like watching a movie every time you sit down to watch an episode for it. It doesn't feel long when you're watching it. It works, but it's just, if you're struggling for time, that's maybe not the best decision to make them that long. But yeah, thoroughly enjoyable. The first episode is is all set in Paris, and it's this young couple who are the young guy is the nephew of this sort of elderly woman who is a direct Romanov descendant and is this horrible sort of cantankerous old woman, and it's dealing with the carers that are coming in to look after her. She's somewhat racist, it would be fair to say, and they ended up with a Muslim with a Muslim carer that comes in. So it's kind of an interesting story, the way that it deals with it. But I really enjoyed the first episode of it. I want to go and watch a few more of them. It's just finding the time to actually do it. It's proving difficult. So that's The Romanoffs. It's on Amazon Prime, if you want to go and watch that. There was a couple of trailers for Toy Story 4 released this week. I don't know if you've caught either of those.
Yeah, I love Toy Story. I mean, who doesn't?
Yes.
It's very much like, you know, the Crash Bandicoot, Spider-Man, the childhood nostalgia goodness. Yes. that we can enjoy. It's been too long. I mean, I know, like, a lot of people say, oh, the third one should have been the end and stuff, but hey, I want more Toy Story. Toy Story.
It was a great ending to that, and it ended that arc quite well. You know, things have somewhat changed. The trailers don't give away very much, other than there is a character called Forky in this one who's struggling with the idea that he was a fork and is now turned into a toy. And what I loved was they then did the follow-up trailer, which has Key and Peele doing the voices, who are a great comedy duo, and it's those two guys who are toys from a fair, like the prizes that you win on a sideshow at a fair, and it's the pair of them discussing the first trailer, which is extremely meta, but that was what the second trailer was, and I really enjoyed that. I thought it was great. So I'm looking forward to that. I think that's out next year, Toy Story 4.
June something.
Something like that, yeah. So
Disney have got a big year next year. Really have, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of big stuff coming out.
They've got
Disney.
Like Avengers 4, Spider-Man 2, they've got, Captain Marvel, Frozen 2, Toy Story 4, and they got the three live action things, Aladdin, Lion King, and Dumbo.
Yeah, well, yes, they have got a big year next year.
Star Wars 9, Episode 9.
Oh yeah, that as well.
Yeah. Bunch of stuff.
crazy. And the last thing on the list, of course, is Red Dead Redemption 2, which we talked a little bit about last week as well. I've actually finished it now. I finished the story mode of it anyway. What a phenomenal game. I've been playing it pretty much, every weekend after I've been finished working. I've been playing for a few hours every night. I just really solidly engrossing story throughout, and it seems to go on forever. I mean, there's what, six chapters?
Yeah, six chapters and two...
And two epilogues.
Epilogues, yeah.
And then
30 minutes of credits with snippets of characters. So,
yeah. Just crazy, crazy amount of stuff. And I mean, the epilogues could be a game in themselves, I think. They almost are, in a way.
They're almost like a whole nother chapter kind of thing.
Yeah, so. They are pretty much. And I mean, then when you finish playing, you can basically go back and wander around in the world and, you know, still go and complete things that you haven't finished and that sort of stuff. I mean, some of the side quests won't be there, but you can go and complete going after legendary creatures and go hunting and that sort of thing. I mean, the epilogues, there is an entire area of the game, the sort of Blackwater area and the place behind that, which is actually the original Red Dead map. The area of Blackwater and that whole section, which you basically can't get to for most of the game, because if you wander in it you'll not only want it, because sometimes you can wander through the wanted dead or alive areas, not have too much hassle, but that area, you go in and suddenly the Pinkertons pop up out of nowhere and just chase after you. So you can run around it a little bit, but it's very, very difficult to get very far in it without getting shot to death. So you can't really explore that area until you get into the epilogue bit. And I mean, that's insane. There is an entire huge portion of the map which you can't get to until after the majority of the story of the game is finished, which is just madness. But I think it's brilliant because it gives you this whole other side that you can then play around with after the game is finished. But I thought it was really interesting that they'd included that, because that is, it's basically the map from the first game, that bottom section, with the exception of the Mexico bit, which isn't there. But other than that, it's the map from the first game. I do wonder whether they're going to, because obviously there's an online section which hasn't been released yet, but I do wonder what DLC might be coming.
I wonder what they could even do with...
It would be really interesting.
Yeah.
It'd be really interesting for them almost to remaster Red Dead 1, the original Red Dead Redemption, in the new engine, because you've got half the map there already.
Yeah.
And look at something like The Witcher. I mean, The Witcher, for one of their expansions, created an entirely new area. So it's entirely possible that you could do that and just create the Mexico bit and basically remaster Red Dead 1, because Red Dead 1, it's set after Red Dead 2, because Red Dead 2 was a prequel. So
yeah,
it would be interesting to take that entire story and run it afterwards. You know, I mean, whether they will do that, I kind of doubt, because it probably is quite a lot of work, but I think there is an appetite for it. If they wanted to do a remaster of it, I think there is definitely an appetite for it, and maybe tweak little bits to add mentions into some of the things that you now know have happened from Red Dead 2. But yeah, I mean, I'd be all for that if they decided they wanted to do it. But I mean, if you've not bought Red Dead, you will not be wasting your money, because I know I look at PlayStation games and stuff and Xbox games and thinking, wow, that's a lot of money to spend on a game. Red Dead is well worth every single penny of it. You will have hours and hours and hours of time in it. So I can't recommend that highly enough. We have the Geektown Awards coming up fairly soon, and
I've been thinking about my like best of year just stuff kind of thing. So
we have that coming up fairly soon, and I mean Red Dead's got to be a contender for game of the year, I would have thought, without question. Yeah. So that's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news. So TV and film news this week, we kick off with renewals, cancellations and pickups. Netflix has cancelled The Good Cop, which is a show we've mentioned numerous times on here. It's the Tony Danza and Josh Groban show. I can't say I'm overly surprised that didn't make it past the first season. Not that it was bad, I just found that it doesn't feel right on Netflix. And I enjoyed it. It was perfectly fine as a show. It just didn't feel like it fitted in to the Netflix mold particularly. And so I'm not overly surprised that it's not made it to another season, but it's a shame.
So I didn't start it, now I won't, but at least we still have The Good Place and Good Girls. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a show with good in it, there are other ones available. Big Mouth has been renewed by Netflix for a third season, which I know will...
I, I thought that had already happened. They released the video a couple of days ago, didn't they? It said, oh, season 3 coming soon. I was like, didn't you already renew that show?
apparently not. But
maybe it was something else.
One that was a little bit of a surprise, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has got a 7th season renewal already. Yeah. And season 6 isn't out until next year. They're actually going to be shorter seasons. They're going to be 13 episodes because they announced May. Yeah. And I mean, I think we've said before, the thing with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is it doesn't really matter that it's 13 episodes because it's always been very much a show of two halves. The plot lines have always been half a season long. So yeah. I think 2 13 episode seasons works perfectly well for it. Part of the reason for renewing it this early, I think, is because there are some contract negotiations going on. So they sort of needed to renew it so they could have something to offer people so they didn't have to drop their contracts. I think that's part of the reason it's happened this early on. But great news, though. So it means that we've definitely got 2 more seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. coming, and the next one's due out in the summer, I think. It's going to be post-Avengers, I think, so they don't have to deal with the snap.
Everything kind of is, isn't it? Apart from Captain Marvel, which kind of has to come out before.
Yes, beforehand, to introduce that character, yeah. Captain Marvel before Avengers, and then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will be out on TV because they don't want to have to deal with explaining the snap and why they're all still there, I guess. So that's back for a 7th season. Sky One has picked up the Magnum PI reboot, which we kind of predicted was going to be the case because it's all tied into Hawaii Five-O and MacGyver and NCIS LA. Okay. It's all part of that same universe. So there was no way Sky was going to let it go anywhere else. There are going to be crossovers with Hawaii Five-O, as you would probably expect, because they're both set on Hawaii and they both have the same showrunners. So that will be coming to Sky One in January, which is when the Hawaii Five-O and NCIS LA will be back. And I guess MacGyver will be back around then as well. Something to look out for. Amazon Prime has renewed Bosch for its 6th season, which the 5th season, again, that's an early renewal. 5th season hasn't even come out for that yet. I haven't watched any episodes of that show, but people tell me it's great, so we'll have to see.
Not watched it either. So
Netflix has signed an overall deal with Marty Noxon, which might not be a name that you particularly recognize, but she started a career working on Buffy and Angel, and has a very kind of twisted, dark sense of humor. She wrote Unreal, she created that show. Sharp Objects was hers as well. She's also worked on Mad Men, Grey's Anatomy, Glee. So this is a woman that knows exactly what she's doing. She's apparently phenomenally nice, having spoken to people that worked with her as well. So she's an absolute genius and a really lovely person to work with. She's been nominated for various Emmys. I'm really interested to see what Netflix do with her, because I think that is a really great, interesting deal, given I adore Unreal. I thought that was a great show. She was wonderful on Buffy and Angel. So we'll have to see what else comes out of that.
There's a lot of good shows in that list, so clearly she does know what she's doing. I haven't seen Buffy or Angel yet. That will probably be part of a classic reviews at some point. But seen Sharp Objects, haven't seen Mad Men yet. I do intend to start that soon-ish. Not seen Glee before, but I know Grey's Anatomy is still good.
Yes.
You don't get to season 15 by accident. So
exactly. And a couple of other quick news stories. Treadstone, the spin-off of the Bourne movie franchise and Bourne books. This is the prequel thing. It's from cast 2 of the leads. One of them is a guy called Jeremy Irvine, who I don't really know. He's a Brit actor. He's been in War Horse. He was in Mike Newell's adaptation of Great Expectations. He was in the Bad Education movie, apparently. Played young Sam in Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, who's the most recent thing. So he's one of the leads.
Who did he play in Bad Education?
I'm not sure. I don't think it was one of the major characters. I could be wrong about that, but he's one of the characters. Plays a CIA spy sent out to eliminate a key target, but finds himself embroiled in an international conspiracy. And Brian J. Smith is the other one, who will be very familiar for people that watch Sense8. He was in that. He was also in Stargate Universe and Gossip Girl as well, with the other two shows that he was known for. But he's a really good actor. And And I'm happy to see him in this. And he plays an oil rig worker called Doug McKenna, whose life is turned upside down when he's discovered long buried truths about himself. So the whole premise for this is it follows the Treadstone Protocol. It was the CIA Black Ops program that created the people like Jason Bourne. So it's going to follow various unstoppable assassins that sort of suddenly get activated.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be a really interesting looking series that comes from Tim Kring, who slightly bothers me because that's a guy that only can write one decent season and then it all goes to pot. So he was the guy that created Heroes and various other shows. And what was the Kiefer Sutherland thing before he became president?
Touch,
yes, was his as well, which was great for one season. So, I'm slightly nervous about the fact that he's involved with it, but we'll see. It has been picked up for a series, so we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. Moving on to some other news, Michelle Yeoh is in talks apparently for a Star Trek Discovery series, which I thought looked kind of an interesting idea. So Michelle Yeoh played Philippa Georgiou, who, spoiler for those that haven't watched Discovery yet, but Philippa Georgiou gets killed off fairly early on, but then kind of gets better once they get to the very universe.
Right, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, we don't know exactly what version of the character they're kind of talking about with this. There is a very good chance that it's going to be dealing with the Mirror Universe Georgiou and Section 31, which is an area which hasn't really been explored very much in the Star Trek universe so far. So, because towards the end of that series, the Mirror Universe Georgiou was approached by Section 31, who are the sort of black ops team of the Star Trek universe. I'm really interested by this because she's a great actress. This will be one of the other shows that they've been talking about creating, because we've got that Picard series coming, we've got the animated comedy Lower Decks coming as well, so will be another one. And it's interesting that it seems to be a direct spin-off from the storyline that was followed in Discovery, but I'm intrigued by this.
I think this is a good idea. I do think it's a little bit maybe early, which I know is like maybe a bit weird, but because to me with you know, being new to Star Trek and stuff, and I really did enjoy Discovery, and I remember we did that very long podcast for episode 15, and we talked about some of the other stuff that happened in the other series and stuff, and like I'd said on that podcast, it's weird how, like, you know, my nan used to watch it, and then my dad watched it kind of with her, and he watches Discovery, and it sort of weirdly feels like it got passed to me, like, hey, Discovery's here, you can just jump in and watch this one.
So I
guess in terms of like watching, I'd like to focus a bit more on Discovery and that sort of stuff, but I'm wondering, like, resource wise and that sort of thing, how all this is going to work out. It does remind me of, you know, when AMC said they want to make, like, you know, movies and miniseries and stuff like that for The Walking Dead. And I said about stretching the resource of people and that kind of stuff, but hey, if they all come out and they're all good, I mean, that would be great as well. But the idea of this series, that sounds pretty good, because that's quite an interesting character, especially if it is the Mirror version. She's got like a lot of mystery to herself and stuff. It should be good. So
I'm very interested in dealing with Section 31 a bit more. As I say, they're sort of the black ops team of that universe, and we've never really covered that, and I think that's an area which is being very underexplored. They sort of covered it a bit in Star Trek Online, that have played around with Section 31 a little bit more in the video game, but of course that's not kind of canon stuff. So I think this could be very interesting, and I like the fact that it's Star Trek, but in a slightly different direction. You know, we've not gone back to having a very traditional discovering new planets Star Trek series, or possibly, I mean, Discovery is the closest we've got to that, and I think next season will be maybe a little bit closer to that. But
yeah,
I like the fact that the spin-offs are very, very different ideas. So I'm all for this. I think this could be really good.
Maybe they'll do a like Game of Thrones Westworld thing, where it's like every other year, so you get a season of Discovery, and then maybe the next year is this series, and then you kind of swap back and forth. Maybe
what Alex Kurtzman had said, who is the god of all things Trek at CBS now, what he's basically said is there should never be a point, ideally, where CBS All Access doesn't have something Trek related, new Trek related coming onto the platform. platform. So the idea
like a take
would
turns
be
kind of thing.
Yeah, so the idea would be that you would. It wouldn't be every other year. The chances are you would be running Discovery, then you might run the spin-off, then you might run the Picard series, then Lower Decks, then you might run go back to running Discovery. So it would be an all-year-round thing, is the idea. Mm. You just run them back-to-back.
I think that's what DC's doing with their DC Universe.
Now,
then they're going to go into, I think, Young Justice is next or something.
Yeah.
So.
That's exactly what DC are doing. They've got new shows coming out, but they're running a new show back-to-back. So I think they're sort of talking about doing that with CBS All Access and trying to run Trek shows back-to-back. Moving on to some casting news, speaking of DC and Supergirl, as we were earlier, they've found their Lex Luthor, because we knew earlier on they'd announced that a few weeks ago that they were going to introduce Lex Luthor to the show. They've cast John Cryer as Lex Luthor, and John Cryer will be most familiar to people as one half of Two and a Half Men, or one of the men in Two and a Half Men that wasn't Charlie Sheen and wasn't fired and wasn't Ashton Kutcher. He was basically last man standing on that show. He is, you'll be used to seeing him on that, although with rather more hair, obviously. I mean, the guy actually has been going bald for a very, very long time, and it was quite an elaborate, he described it as a sort of elaborate ruse, his hairstyle, and they spent a lot of time in makeup getting his hair right, because he has been going bald for a very long time. But now he's sort of embracing it and has kind of shaved it all off. So this is really the perfect role for him. And I rather like him. I can see him playing this more serious role, because we're used to seeing him in comedies. So this will be a bit more of a kind of serious kind of villain role, I guess. I mean, it's still Supergirl and it's still Lex Luthor, but I'm quite interested to see what he's going to do with this.
And he's got his sister there already. Is it his sister? Lena.
Yeah, Dana. So Lex has never been seen on screen before. He's only been mentioned, and the fact that he was in prison, so somehow obviously he's getting out of prison, we suspect, unless they're doing something with him behind bars. I don't know.
So is he not Charlie Sheen, not Ashton Kutcher, the other one? Okay, yeah.
Yeah,
because lots of you and lots of different news places reported this. I was like, who is this guy? And then now that you said Two and a Half Men and you said which one it is, I recognize the guy now. So,
yes, he's the other one.
I was sort of like, I don't think I've ever seen him before, because I've seen episodes here and there of Two and a Half Men. I've never watched it all the way through.
Interestingly, he does have a connection to DC and to Lex Luthor, because in the, shall we say, less than good Superman IV, The Quest for Peace, which was basically, I mean, the special effects on that movie were essentially bits of cardboard tubing and pieces of string. I mean, it was horrifically under budget. And
when was that?
Oh, late 80s, probably. Horrendous. It was the last of the Christopher Reeve Superman movies. And very unfortunate that was the thing that ended up going out on, because it was a terrible, terrible film. In that movie, he played Lenny Luthor, who was Lex's nephew. So he has played a Luthor previously. So it adds a little bit of that DC sort of legacy. We do talk about casting on DC shows being a bit like having a Rolodex of all the people that were previously on DC shows, and they just pull names out, you know.
Right, like with, was it Terry Hatcher?
Terry Hatcher and people like that. So he's also voiced Felix Faust, who is another villain, and voiced in Justice League Action. So, I mean, he has got some connection to having done DC stuff and DC villains before. Interesting bit of casting. I'm looking forward to seeing what he does with that. Moving on, back to Netflix, we've got them ordering a show called The One, which is a sci-fi show based on the John Mars novel from Misfits creator Howard Overman. It's a 10-episode season order. It's sort of a sci-fi relationship drama that's described as set 5 minutes in the future. The One takes place in a world where a DNA test can find you the perfect partner, the one person you're genetically predisposed to fall in love with, no matter how good your relationship, which one of us can honestly say we haven't thought about whether there's somebody better out there. What if a hair sample is all it takes to find them? The idea is simple, but the implications are explosive. We'll never think of love and relationships in the same way again. I rather like this idea. I mean, it sounds perfect for a Howard Overman kind of show. Howard Overman, as I say, created Misfits, created Future Man as well, which is the sci-fi series. Also created Crazy Head, which was that show that went out on Channel 4, which we covered quite a lot.
I remember that, and it never came back.
Yeah, and didn't come back. back. So
just like Wasted.
I still mourn the loss of Wasted. That was hilarious, that series.
Yeah.
So yeah, that you know the sort of humour that you're going to get from Howard Overman, right. And this seems like the perfect sort of thing for him.
And Netflix, you can get away with more and that sort of thing. Although yeah. Misfits and Crazy Head were pretty good in that way anyway. So they were like later shows, weren't they? They were like 10 p.m. shows, Misfits and Crazy Head. But yeah, Netflix will still allow him to tell those kind of crazy stories. So yeah, this should be quite good. So. Yeah,
I'm quite looking forward to this. I like the idea of it. I think it's an interesting concept. There was an episode of Black Mirror, I think, that did this as an idea.
Yeah, they did the relationship thing, and you had, was it like a yes and no clock or something?
Yeah, they pre-timed how long the relationship would last.
Oh, yeah, like 90 days, 2 years or something.
Yeah, so, and you sort of had to stay with that person for the pre-sort of set amount of time. So, you've seen similar things, and this does seem like a sort of series based on kind of an idea of a Black Mirror, but it is based on an original novel. So, I'm quite looking forward to this. I think it could be quite interesting. Moving on, there is a Jack Reacher series in development, which I know you posted when I posted this. You're saying what we need is a Jack Bauer series. So yes, we've had Jack Bauer, we've had Jack Ryan, we're now getting Jack Reacher.
Cool.
To be honest, I think I may have watched the first movie, but I don't remember much about it. They're obviously based on novels by Lee Childs. And this was an interview he did with the BBC, and he was basically saying he loved working with Tom Cruise on those films. Really, really nice guy. Had lots of fun on it, but there were a lot of criticisms from fans because in the books he's described as, 6'5", hands the size of dinner plates, and with the best will in the world, Tom Cruise is not that. He can get away with playing quite a lot, but he is not the biggest guy. And this was supposed to be somebody more the Rock size by the sounds of it. So there was quite a lot of criticism of that, and it wasn't how a lot of people saw Jack Reacher who had read the books. So what they're trying to do is they've said they won't be any more movies with Cruise because they did two of them. They're not going to do any more of those. They're now going to develop it as a TV series. They're going to recast the lead, and it will definitely be somebody who is more appropriate to being the size that Reach is supposed to be in the books. I mean, I think this sounds like a good idea. It looks like a character that I think could work quite well as a series. There's like a whole raft of these Jack Reacher books anyway. There's like 9 of them or something that they could use for stories. So they're not exactly short of material.
What network has got this? Has that not been decided yet?
Not been decided yet. At the moment, there's no broadcaster attached to it. I mean, he was talking in the interview about Netflix or someone like that was what he's saying.
I think that's a good idea.
So it will probably go onto a streaming service of some description. Lightly Amazon or Netflix is what they're considering.
That's probably a good idea. Yeah,
that's who they're going to try and pitch it to. And I mean, at the end of the day, all they're saying is they are developing it. They think that that is the way forward. They are in the process of developing that. It's not been sold to anybody, so anything could happen with that.
Cool. In the meantime, let's try and get Jack Bauer back, because just like a certain other character, he's still in the helicopter.
Yes.
So, Yes. I'd like to see him again. It's been 4 years, so yes. almost five.
All your favourite, as we discussed previously, all your favourite characters leaving helicopters. So that's all the news we have for this week. Next, we have the interview.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The interview this week is with Joseph Frioli, who is the sound designer on a new sci-fi movie called Kin. Joseph has an established reputation for complex and fearless sonic experimentation with his critically acclaimed album as Detachy. In his sound design work for advertising and film, he strives to create the equally unique and immersive world that pushes boundaries and surprises listeners. His latest project sees him develop the amazing magnetic sci-fi sounds for Jonathan Joss Baker's sci-fi movie Kin. Kin, starring Jack Rayner, Miles Truitt, Dennis Quaid, Zoe Kravitz, and James Franco. The film is described as a crime thriller with a sci-fi twist and tells the story of an unexpected hero destined for greatness, chased by a vengeful criminal played by Franco, and a gang of otherworldly soldiers. A recent released ex-con and his adopted teenage brother are forced to go on the run with a weapon of mysterious origin as their only protection. Here's the interview with Joseph. We'll be back after this with some highlights for next week on TV. Thank you for coming on. It's lovely to chat with you. We've spoken to a few sound designers before, but do you want to just explain what your job is for people who haven't heard the other sound design interviews we've done?
Sure. So basically what I do is I create sound effects and sounds for things in movies that, you know, don't necessarily exist in real life. I mean, an easy example is, you know, anything science fiction or creatures and that kind of thing. And that's one aspect of it. And the other aspect of my job is finding the drama and the storytelling through sound to support the film and enhance it, the experience.
Cool. That makes sense, I think. The film that you've been working most recently on is Kin, which right. I think has just had a release in the UK.
Oh, cool.
November 9th. I haven't managed to catch it yet, but it November 9th, I think it came out. So it's literally just been released over here. Oh. Before we get into the movie itself, start off with a little bit of background. How did you get into doing sound design in the first place?
It was kind of funny. Like when I was really young, I was a guitar player. When I was, you know, started playing guitar when I was around 10 years old, and I would just play all the time. All my free time would be playing guitar. And I had an older brother who's a musician. And so we had this little 4-track studio in the basement. And I just started experimenting with sounds, with these effects pedals my brother had and all these different instruments we had in the basement, just to sort of see what the instruments could do. I mean, that was my first real experimentation with sound. And then it wasn't until when I was 16 years old, when Jurassic Park came out, I went to go see it with my brother, and the sound of that T-Rex was so unexpected. Mm. I just thought it was like I wasn't expecting to be scared in that movie, but it was actually like so terrifying because it was so unexpected yet so fitting to that creature, especially when it was attacking the kids in the car when you first see it on camera. But that really blew me away. And then it was like a couple weeks later, they had Gary Rydstrom on a news special talking about the sound of Jurassic Park, and they just showed him sort of sitting behind a mixing console, mixing the different sounds of the animals together to make the sound of the dinosaurs. And I was like, whoa, you know, I couldn't believe that was somebody's job, and it just stuck with me. I was like, that was really cool. And I was like, I just thought it was such a cool thing. And then, you know, it wasn't until years later. I mean, I had a career as an electronic musician. I make experimental electronic music under the alias Daytachi.
Right.
And it was through that where I got an opportunity to sonify a museum installation at the Museum of Modern Art in New York. And that was my first time working in picture. I was like probably 21 years old or 22. And that really clicked for me too. I was like, oh, you know, this is working to someone else's picture. Was like almost like I was creating these movies in my head. And I feel like like the movies and stuff that inspired my music, right? So so when I was working, doing sound design to picture, it just all sort of came together. It's like, oh, this is so fulfilling because it's like, you know, the imagery is already there to support, rather than just, you know, these images in my head that I'm trying to describe solely through sounds.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah, totally. So that's like sort of how it started. And then like, you know, it was years of freelancing around and until I had like enough clients to really be doing this full time. So
yeah, the film Kin is based on a short film done by the same director as Jonathan Josh Baker. I've actually seen Bagman because the short is up on YouTube. So I watched that earlier today, which is it's a great little short. And I can really see how you can sort of expand that idea out into a bigger film. The larger film, it feels from the trailers and stuff I've seen, it almost feels like a little indie intimate film, but then has this big sci-fi kind of twist to it, which I thought was a really interesting idea.
Yeah, it's super cool. I mean, they really went all out with multiple genres being sort of threaded together and different storylines that all sort of come together at one point. towards the end of the film and sort of reveals itself in an interesting way, like what the purpose of the different interactions were. And the Bakers are great at that. They're great at having an idea, a simple idea, and expanding upon it and building a world around it. And we just have so much fun. I mean, I've been working with them for a long time now. Probably I've done all of their projects since probably 2007 or 2008, commercials, short films, and then this feature. But with that short film, it was a special thing. I mean, we knew it was special, and just we really put everything into it and made it something unique and had a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, and is it odd working for kind of two directors? Because two directors was something you never used to get very much, and then you kind of the Wachowskis came along and the Russos, and
right.
Now you've got the Baker brothers that are doing it. And so they're twins, aren't they? They're twin brothers.
Twin brothers. They look identical, but they're not. I mean, a lot of people have a really hard time telling them apart, especially when they have their haircuts the same and that kind of thing.
Right.
But they're actually, what is it, fraternal twins, I think. So it's like they, you know, it's not identical. But anyway, I mean, it's just I'm so used to it, and it's great. I mean, the more you get to know them, you know their differences as people and how they both contribute. Like they can easily finish each other's ideas and sentences and all that kind of thing. But at the same time, they have a slightly different opinion sometimes, and they're so used to working things out that it winds up being a really huge beneficial thing because they're able to work out these singular ideas and together. And they're also really smart, so it's really, really great.
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
you sort of got, and you also always got a sounding board there, regardless, you know, which must be really useful for them.
Yeah, for sure.
There's a lot of sci-fi elements in the film. How was your approach to that? Because I know a lot of it's based around this sort of magnetic energy idea.
Yeah, so you know, we started off like John and Josh had that idea like really early, before we even wrote the script. Like all this stuff, all their technology based off magnetism. So, you know, I had a lot of time to think and play around with it. And I started off with like, you know, the sort of what anyone would expect that to sound like, which is like, you know, like low frequency textural humming and that kind of thing. And then that I was like, you know, that's not really that interesting or new or exciting. So I just kept playing around with the idea and thinking about that concept and just came up with a palette of sounds that sort of could represent how this technology works and how the magnetism is working from a mechanical standpoint, which gave another layer of like textural interest to the sounds. That was the second step. And then the third step was thinking about magnetism conceptually on how you have all these characters that are sort of these broken characters and how they're all coming together as a form of magnetism. So I had that in my subconscious, like thinking about connecting these characters, and it was like another layer of sound design where I would just sort of try to bring these characters together with sound to help support that aspect of the story.
Yeah, there's a couple of other interesting characters in this as well, which are referred to as the cleaners, and
yes.
They're sort of stormtrooper-esque kind of, they're all in black, completely covered suit people, and yeah. they have a kind of language moving backwards and forwards. So the voices for those are actually you and your wife.
That's right. Yeah, so that was a fun thing too, is because in the script they were never supposed to have any voices. They were supposed to just have like this ominous breathing, which is also there. But the first scene that I got was when they're in the Ducati dealership scanning these motorcycles. And basically there was this one shot where one of them looks at the other one. And I had the breathing. And I was really happy with that. But I was like, oh, man, you know, it was like it was the perfect place for it to put some kind of communication between them to make it even more mysterious. Mm. Like they're talking to each other. They're communicating. So I created a sort of rough idea of that and sent it over to Mark Day, the editor, and you know, played it for the Bakers, and they loved it. So I just went on to create this language for these characters to thread throughout the movie. And I did it by it was recording long passages of dialogue of both my wife and I talking about our cats and random stuff, and just to get different things out of my wife, you know, just like make her laugh or do these weird things, because the way that I would process the dialogue would, you know, the different inflections of your voice would just result in different interesting sort of weird glitches and things like that. So I created this process and this language, and then so it was this big scrambled, jumbled up long passage of dialogue for two different people, for my wife and myself, as the source material. And then I would just go in and edit together all the little pieces of dialogue. So there's like little syllables and phonemes, and cut them up and just make them into a language that almost felt like you could understand what they were trying to communicate, like as if you were listening. If you didn't speak, let's say, Italian, but it's a Latin-based language, so through their expressions, you can kind of understand what they're communicating, but you have no idea what they're saying, kind of thing. So it was that approach. And so it just worked out really well. I think there was even one scene in the end where John and Josh were sure that they knew what the cleaners were saying. It wasn't at all that, but I just had edited it to the action and to the bit of the story that was happening. So your brain automatically thinks that you know what the character's saying. Yeah, so that was really fun.
That's cool. Yeah. That's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun, man.
What sort of objects are you using to create a sound? Or what's the oddest thing that you found to get a sound out of?
That's a tough one. I mean, they're all pretty odd, I guess. I mean, I don't know what a standard thing would be, is the interesting thing. I use everything I can find to support an idea. So, you know, a lot of stuff from the dollar store, from like, the party supply stores, up to like, you know, proprietary sound design computers and stuff like that. So it's anything that's available to sort of support the idea. I use when the cleaners throw these magnetic balls into the air and they sort of disperse into these little pyramids and form this hologram. I use this thing called an ohm wand, which is it's almost like a device. It looks like a sword with a plastic piece of tape around it.
Right.
That goes the perimeter of it, and you swing it around, it makes a sound. And it was originally developed for like meditation and stuff like that, like almost as an alternative to a Tibetan singing bowl kind of thing.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, all my friends know that I'm like super into sound and stuff like that. So even I'll just get stuff for Christmas or gifts from friends. Like anytime any of my friends like find some weird thing on their travels, they get it for me. And my buddy got me this thing. And I was like, oh my God, it was like perfect timing. He's like, this is perfect for this sound. And there's a lot. I use my Eurorack modular synthesizer, which is what a modular synthesizer is. It's like a big panel. It looks like a patch bay of different modules. Almost looks what people would think is a telephone communication patch bay from like the 1950s or something.
Yeah.
But basically what that enables me to do is create original sound and unique sounds by patching together these different modules and controlling them with different controllers. Like I had a Wii nunchuck controller connected to the synthesizer, where I would be able to control and make all these different articulations by waving my hand around using the accelerometer and the controller. So that was super fun.
That's very cool. And on the sort of opposite end of that, what's the most mundane thing you've used to get like a noise which has ended up in the film?
Good question. You know, Taylor, James Franco's character, at one point is cooking.
Yeah.
I don't know why the bakers were, it was before a screening, and they were really hung up on like, oh yeah, make sure you make the sandwich like sound like it's burning. I'm like, really? And you want me to focus on the sandwich? So I just went and recorded like some stuff in the frying pan just to get the right sizzling of the sound of this sandwich that was pretty burnt. But it was just more funny in the context. We have like all these like, you know, big action sci-fi things to handle, and like, oh yeah, don't forget the sandwich.
You know what I mean? Yeah. We always focus on like the most interesting, weird, and wonderful things. It's like, you've also got to do this.
Right, exactly. Right.
So the music in the film's done by Mogwai, the great Scottish band. Is there any kind of leakage between you as the sound designer and the score?
It's really interesting. I actually have a long history with Mogwai. So back on my second album release, they had done a remix for me.
Ah.
For my Detachi project back in 2000. So, you know, I was in touch with them back then, and I reconnected with them when you know, they signed on to do this film, and just over email. And it was kind of amazing. I only had a couple of thoughts that, you know, because I was working on the film at that point for about 10 months when they got involved. And I was like, hey guys, you know, the sound of the main weapon, Eli's weapon, you know, it's an atonal sound that I created on my modular synthesizer. It doesn't like exist on any particular key. And plus it's fluctuating in pitch because there's a shepherd leopard tone filter on it.
Right.
And that was one thing I told him. And then the other thing I told him was, it'd be really great if we can sort of integrate your style of, because their music is very sound design driven. I mean, it's very like, there's aspects of it that are very tonal and textural. Mm. And I was like, you know, it'd be super cool if we can sort of integrate this, the music and sound, so it becomes one thing in certain scenes. And that was it. And then we just talked, we joked around a little bit on an email, and that was it. And then when I heard the final score, I think it was coming in during the final mix, the first day of the final mix, I was blown away by what they did. I mean, there was one scene where the sound and music, they actually, I had this beeping of the weapon when Eli finds the weapon in this abandoned warehouse, and it's beeping like almost like a bit of sonar. And that's like a whole nother story that I created, like this whole, like, it's almost like a part of that conceptual magnetism where the gun sort of calls Eli with sound. So it's beeping as Eli gets closer to it, the beeps accelerate. So during that time, when Eli picks the weapon up, it's beeping at a certain tempo and pitch, and Mogwai started the piece of music to that pitch and in that time of the beeps. And it's like a main theme of Eli's that works throughout the film. And they did that like without even, you know, communicating with me, which just shows like that it's really cool. It's almost like we were jamming, you know, that they're able to do that. So it really, that was like one of my favorite scenes, how it worked out.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
So what's the most interesting experience you've had while working?
I mean, it's always fun to go out and record because there's always other aspects to it that you're not expecting. Like, okay, I'm going to go to this location and I'm going to record these sounds. But what you don't realize is you're having this experience and you're going to a place that you may not go otherwise, and you meet new people and you meet them under a different context. And you know, recording is always something I really love to do. And with this film in particular, I think the best part about it was the experience of being able to work with John and Josh for so long, because we, you know, on this one project and collaborate so closely, because, you know, we've become such good friends over it, and the whole crew too.
You mentioned being out recording sound there. Are you one of the sort of people that always have a kind of microphone or recording device just in case you stumble across something?
Oh my God, absolutely. And I'm always wondering, like, which mic should I put in the car? Like, where am I going? Like that's like a big part of my day, because I have like a small recorder in the car, and then I have another even smaller one on me. It's this little mic called an Insta mic, which is this really great, it's the world's smallest portable recorder. It's about the size of a quarter, waterproof, and does mid-side recording and all these other different things that really work well for post-production, although you need to play with the sound to get it sound good. But that's on me. Then I have another one in the car, and my worst feeling is when I'm in a situation like, oh my God, I wish I had my mic with me or something, because it's just, you never know like when something good's gonna come up. And I think it was Dave Rose, a sound editor on this movie, told me like his professor when he was in school told him, the best mic that you have is the mic that's on you. And that's totally, I mean, I've recorded amazing sounds with crappy mics just because it was happening. And it was, you know, you can always plan for that stuff. So
yeah. Must be occasions you're out with the wife and it's like, you're not listening to me, are you? You've just heard something.
Yeah. Oh, all the time. And a lot of times I'm talking about we have these conversations sometimes that are like both going one way. Like I'm talking about some sound thing and she's talking to me about some like shopping thing or something, or, you know, or something. We're just not even, and I'm like, oh,
oh dear. So I'll give you the last two questions that we ask everybody.
Cool.
So the first one is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
You know what? I watch so much TV, especially streaming TV, that I'm like out of TV shows. I've watched everything. So you tell me something good to watch.
One show which really surprised me that I watched because I interviewed somebody that was working on it, which was Mozart in the Jungle, which is an Amazon series. It's about the sort of fictional New York Philharmonic. And I was kind of like, I don't know whether I want to watch a thing about a Philharmonic orchestra, but it's hilarious. It's really funny.
Awesome.
It's well worth watching. The sound work in it is lovely as well. That's one I would recommend.
Okay.
I'm trying to think what else you've got.
Have you watched Dark?
No, I haven't. That's the German language thing on Netflix, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so great. Was blown away by it. At first I was like, oh man, Netflix defaulted to being dubbed, and I'm like, this is completely awful, I can't get into like the dub is I can't watch that. But as soon as you turn on the subtitles, it's like, wow. I mean, the writing, the tone, they really nailed it on that show. And it was such a surprising, well-written thing. It kind of reminded me of like, it's like Stranger Things, but mixed with like Lost. Or it was a great show, I thought. That and Handmaid's Tale. Have you watched that?
Yeah. Seen Handmaid's Tale. Love that. Yeah. Umbrella Academy is another one that I'd watch out for on Netflix.
Oh my God, Umbrella Academy's got produced. That's amazing. Funny story about that. John and Josh, maybe 10 years ago, I believe, pitched on that movie.
Really?
And I did a little sound treatment for a movie version of that.
Really?
Yeah. This was a long time ago. I'm surprised it was, that's cool that they developed it into a TV show. I want to check that out for sure.
Yeah, Netflix series, 15th of February next year, that's coming out.
Cool.
Yes, that's one for you. The last question, if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, past, present, or future, which show would it be?
Wow, that's hard. Past, present, or future. Let's see. Let me think. I would say Lost.
Yeah.
Frank Marone, who's a good friend of mine, who was the mixer on Kin, amazing mixer. He mixed that whole show. So I'm always asking him questions about it. He loves talking about it, too. So it's awesome. And because of the process, too, for Frank and everyone on the team, like, I was so into it as an audience member. But, you know, for them, too, they were into it, but they didn't know what was going to happen until they got the show. So, and, you know, they were just working with J.J. Abrams, sounded really great. And just the sounds that were created for that show, I thought were really unique and really felt like a part of that world, and it was so mysterious. And I think mystery is something that I always look for in any kind of film or TV thing. It's like, no matter what the main genre is, if there's a subtext of mystery, I love it. And I think, you know, anything Damon Lindelof does always has that. And sometimes I feel like it turns people off because they're like, where is this going? What's going on? And like, people need stuff to be like, some people need stuff to be very, very direct. But I love it because the way that he writes, like, for example, with Lost, it's like you're in there with the characters. They don't know what's going on, and you don't, you know, so you're discovering it together. And I believe he wrote Prometheus with Ridley Scott. You know, that's another movie that has a very, you know, you feel like you're in the movie because, you know, you're discovering things as they happen. So that's a really fun aspect of storytelling that I love.
Yeah. Of course, he's got Watchmen coming out.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I got to check that out.
So
for sure.
Don't know when that's going to land yet, probably next year sometime, but definitely going to be one to watch, I think.
Definitely.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on and spending a little bit of time to chat through your stuff. As I say, I haven't managed to see the movie yet, but it is one that I will go and try and catch.
Awesome, man. I hope you like it.
Yeah, it looks really cool. It's a really interesting idea. So looking forward to it.
Cool.
I will let you get back to your day.
Thank you so much.
Talk to you soon.
Bye. Bye.
That was the interview with Joseph Frioli, the sound designer on Kin. Kin has recently been released in UK cinemas, and you may be able to catch it there, but you can actually buy it as a stream from Amazon right now. The DVD and Blu-ray discs are out on the 26th of December, which you can also get from Amazon and any other good retailer. Now we'll move on to some highlights for next week on TV. So a little short on highlights for next week on TV this week. There's just not that many new things starting. We've got Mystery Science Theatre 3000, which is the second season, but that's subtitled The Gauntlet. That has Kingus, who subjects Jonah and the bots to a devious new experiment, a back-to-back marathon of six hilariously cheesy and riff-worthy films. So 22nd of November for that, if you want to go and look at that. The Brokenwood Mystery, which is back for its fifth season. That's the New Zealand detective drama series. That's on the 23rd of November on Drama at 8 p.m. for that. And then Frontier, which has the Man Mountain that is Jason Momoa back. You can also catch an action with Man fairly soon. That's on Netflix for season three of that on the 23rd of November. I've not watched the first couple of seasons of this. It's about the North American fur trade. There are only six episodes each. They're fairly short runs, actually, so they might be worth going to look up. But third season of that is coming on the 23rd of November. That's Frontier. So that's everything for this week, unless you've got anything else you want to mention.
You can follow me on Twitter at eTalkUK.
For us, if you want more information, you can go to the website at geektown.co.uk throughout the week to see the latest air date info. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/Geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/Geektown, and on Instagram at Geektown UK. And of course, we are now on Spotify. If you want to search for Geektown Radio on Spotify, you can find us on there. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.